do that tonight. Hey, folks, welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I'm your host, Ken Molman, and this is the My View Matters Radio Network. I never quite know what the music's going to do. Sometimes it stays loud. Sometimes it goes soft. Sometimes it is real loud and then real soft, like it was tonight. But we're here every week, 7 o'clock Sunday nights, 7 p.m. Eastern time. And we thank you for tuning in. If you're catching us on the podcast, we do invite you to tune in live. We do take live callers during the second half of the show. So those of you that are listening live, get your questions ready and call in during the bottom half of, or after the bottom half of the hour. And ask your question. The number here is area code 858-683-1326. And if you want to call in early and get in the queue, you can do that, but we won't take your call until the bottom half of the hour. That's the format we've switched to, and that seems to be working out pretty well. So getting to it here, we're going to have Katie on from the well, she was with the Industrial Hemp Museum. I don't know exactly if she was with the Industrial Hemp Commission. I don't exactly know what her title is today, but she's definitely a hemp activist in the state of Kentucky, and we'll have her joining us here in just a few minutes. But to get started, as always, our weekly randomly generated political rhetoric is, unlike myself, my opponent wants an America where Rupert Murdoch yes men and tribal warlords can sabotage our small businesses. I always like the random political generator. Bit of non-political news, in case you missed it. UK beat Wichita State, and that means that the next game in the tournament for UK and U of L is together. So UK and U of L will be playing each other next, and that will make every bar in Kentucky completely full. And it'll be a good game to watch, I'm sure. Both teams are formidable teams. I don't really pick a side. I just hope for a good game, and I think that that will be a good game to watch. So good luck to both teams. Let's see here. I had some random weird thing that I saw that it's kind of an inside joke, but we had some friends of mine and I were talking about, is it possible to be one-third something? Could you, from an ethnicity standpoint, could you be one-third something? And basically what we did was we proved with math that it's impossible to be one-third anything. And what's funny is that here, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, there was a story that came out about they are going to try to do some gene splice or something or other where one set of genes from dad is joined with a spliced set of genes from mom with another mom. And what that means is that the math is going to get a little funnier. And may make it actually possible to have one-third of a ethnicity. And so that's kind of a silly inside joke thing for some of my folks up here. But you know, it is kind of interesting and kind of scary, but whatever. It'd be interesting to see how that turns out. One more quick thing before we get to Katie. If you remember, oh boy, a couple, 3 weeks ago, there was an anchor on RT, Russia Today, that kind of stormed out. So this is my last broadcast. I can't be a party to Russian propaganda, blah, blah, blah. And it turns out it wasn't so random. It appears to have been pretty planned. There's some Twitter feeds, things like that, that were out there that were awfully curious. They were actually promoting, hey, you should be watching RT coming up because something big's going to happen and things like that. So it wasn't really a random, you know, sudden call of conscience. It was a planned thing to occur. And so, you know, just in typical fashion, the media is what the media is. Well, let's see here. So I want to go ahead and bring Katie on. Let's see. Katie, are you with us?
I am, Ken. Great to be back on the show.
Hey, we really appreciate you coming back on the show. We've had actually a number of folks. Hemp is probably the number one topic we get asked about on the show, and I don't, you know, want to have it on every show, although I'm sure there's plenty of information. Our other listeners might get a little annoyed if we turned it into the Kentucky Industrial Hemp Show. but I do think it's that there's been a lot. I think it's been almost a year since you were on last, and I think there's been a lot of changes both at the state and federal level, and things are starting to move, and people had a lot of questions, and you and I have talked off the show about some of the things. You know, honestly, I don't know all the details, and so I wanted to get you on the show and let you explain to folks where we are at this moment with Kentucky, with the federal laws, what, you know, kind of where the laws are, and then what's happening now and where we're heading. So I guess let's start with the state. Have there been any changes to anything at the state level after we passed the industrial hemp bill?
No, actually, we have not changed anything with regard to state law, and that was kind of up for discussion, and I think it probably will help if I start from roughly last year this time when we passed the hemp bill in the Kentucky legislature. We passed the industrial hemp bill, which would allow us to regulate and grow industrial hemp for research, for commercial purposes, for whatever we need to do. And after that, you know, we kind of were in limbo for a while. We had several months pass where we felt like, all right, well, we passed a bill. Now what do we do? Nobody really was ready to move forward. The ag department wanted to get clarification from the federal government that if we moved forward with industrial hemp, it wasn't going to cause any legal issues for our farmers. And
right.
So we kind of were pressuring different organizations in the federal government for some kind of clarification. Rand Paul actually sat down with Attorney General Eric Holder, and you know, that's a meeting that you probably wouldn't hear about too often, but they sat down and Rand tried to convince him to give us a waiver or give us some kind of clarification and letting us know that we could legally move forward without federal intervention. And at this point, you know, we knew that on the state level, we're all good to go. We just wanted to make sure, you know, for our farmers and for our activists and individuals who wanted to get involved with industrial hemp, that nobody was going to get in trouble. So letters were sent to the Department of Justice. Letters were sent to the DEA. I mean, there was a lot of pressuring and kind of nagging going on from the state level to the federal government and requesting that they give us clarification. And we never really heard anything back. Now, we had some letters that went to representatives in different states, and we had some things that kind of gave us a little inkling that, you know, maybe we'll be okay if we just move forward with this. But what really sealed the deal was just recently during the passage of the Farm Bill, and that was just here in 2014. It either passed last month or the month before. I'm not sure exactly how long it's been. But when the federal legislature passed the Farm Bill, there was a provision inserted into that Farm Bill. It was 2 pages long. It was a very simple 2 pages. And, in fact, you can actually read those pages if you go to Facebook, you go to my website, Kentucky for Hemp. If you look up Kentucky for Hemp on Facebook and scroll down a little ways, there is a link that you can click on. It's a link to Vote Hemp's website that will allow you to see those 2 pages from the Farm Bill. Now, what that did in those 2 pages was it allowed any states that have legalized hemp on the state level to move forward with pilot projects, either through their departments of agriculture or through university, and allow those pilot projects to actually grow hemp for research purposes. Now, it's not the you know, the ultimate goal. We have not reached our ultimate goal of actually growing hemp commercially. But what that did was it allowed Kentucky, because we've already passed our legislation on the state level, our agriculture department, our commissioner of agriculture, they're in full support of this. So it allows us to actually grow hemp for a pilot project. And what we're actually going to do is grow 6 different pilot projects across the state of Kentucky, and two in eastern Kentucky, 2 in central Kentucky, and 1 in western Kentucky. And each of those pilot projects will focus on a different aspect of industrial hemp farming. So so while we have not completely legalized hemp for commercial purposes, we have at least gotten over that first hurdle of what we needed to do to actually bring some seed into the country and do some research and essentially make sure that these varieties of hemp will grow well in the United States and in Kentucky.
Okay.
So
rewinding a
little
bit.
So that's essentially where we are right now.
Okay. Well, I want to rewind a little bit. I know at the state level, before the Farm Bill was passed, there was a bit of a debate on whether we could go forward or not. I remember Agriculture Commissioner Comer said that with the Justice Department basically green-lighting, actual full-blown marijuana growing in other states and sales and whatnot, that basically greenlit us here. And then I do know that Attorney General Conway said, no, it doesn't. And so that was, that's been almost a year ago, I think now too, maybe 9 months ago, during that debate and during the limbo period. And I really think that, in my opinion, I think Conway missed a key opportunity to actually step up for the hemp movement and just say, hey, if they're going to legalize the full-blown marijuana, then certainly hemp is fine. One of the things that we talked about last week, one of the callers called in and asked about hemp, and he mentioned that the current policy for full-blown marijuana, now we have the hemp bill or the farm bill, and the hemp is basically, at least what we've done so far, is protected there. But because it's at least currently, a Department of Justice decision not to prosecute marijuana, that, you know, the next administration can come in and undo that. And, in fact, there is a push by certain people. I know the House passed a bill out of the United States House that I think it's just the House that said that it was basically it was a wimpy impeachment, basically. It was, hey, you're not enforcing the laws. You need to enforce the laws. And in particular, a number of Republicans focused on the marijuana policy. So I do think it's very important that the federal government did clarify that we can go forward with at least getting started with hemp. So I guess the next part is what's happening now? Where are we in the state of Kentucky? What's up with the pilot programs? Where are we now?
Well, right now, each of the pilot projects have been basically the teams for each project have been set up. They've selected universities that will work with each project, and they've selected what we're kind of, you know, quote-unquote calling team captains for each pilot. And so each of the pilot project's captains are working on bringing seed into the country or finding seed, acquiring seed somehow, and essentially setting up their pilot projects and laying out all the plans, because obviously this isn't something that we can just do in one day and then that's it, we're done. This is going to take us a year. I mean, it's going to take an entire growing season to grow it. It's going to take we're going to need several weeks to actually ret the stalks. We're going to need time to process. We're going to need, you know, time to do all of this. So it's a very long process. And that's kind of at the stage right now where we are. We're in the planning process of the entire pilot project. So obviously we're still a little bit early in the season for planting, and I think that each of the projects are essentially in the same boat where we're all just kind of, because the Farm Bill just passed so recently, we're all kind of scrambling around to get our farmers together, get our seed together, figure out how we're going to get this harvested, how we're going to get it processed, what are we going to do with the final materials when we're finished. So while there's plenty of different opportunities and different things we could do with it, it's just a bit of a rush to, figure out exactly what each project is going to do. And
You're saying that we are going to grow this year. Is that what you're saying? There will be hemp grown in Kentucky this year?
We will. We will be growing industrial hemp in Kentucky this year.
That is wonderful. Wonderful news.
Mm-hmm. And I wish, I absolutely wish that we were growing it on a large scale, but the projects are not going to be very big. The goal of these projects is to make sure that, you know, the seed that we've got, the seed that we're bringing in will grow here. You know, is it something we can use for commercial purposes? The University of Louisville is doing their project on bioremediation. So they're actually growing hemp on an industrial site where the soil has been damaged and the soil is tainted. So they're going to, you know, see how hemp actually can remediate the soil and clean it up and help to make that soil better. So each project is going to focus on different aspects of industrial hemp. There's a project that will be done, I believe it's with the University of Kentucky, that is actually going to focus on CBD research and extracting CBD, the compound CBD from industrial hemp to use as a treatment for epilepsy in children. So we've got quite a bit of, you know, interesting projects going on here.
Yeah, and that is actually really interesting. It's not just a matter of will it grow, but also what can we do with it. I think that's a good thing. I think that it's not really a question of will it grow. It's going to be a question of what strains grow the best. Because, you know, Kentucky was covered in hemp at one time. So, I mean, we know it grows. I am very interested. One of the things that doesn't get talked about a lot in industrial hemp is the bioremediation, the cleaning up polluted soil with hemp. I think that's something that that to me is extremely interesting, because that's something that, you know, today if you go to a polluted site, you have the EPA declare it a Superfund site, you're spending millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars while the EPA takes all the soil and digs it all up and takes it somewhere and buries it in a very deep hole and then has to bring in other soil to, I mean, reclaim the land. And it's really, really expensive. And, you know, I'm as against pollution as the next person. Who's for pollution? Raise your hand. So I think that it is an interesting and exciting prospect to be able to use something natural based on how hemp it is correct me if I'm wrong, but it's not a very deep-rooted plant, and that's why it's able to do a lot of the bioremediation, soil contamination cleanup. And I think that's something that holds a lot of promise as well, not just for somebody that wants a hemp shirt or, you know, hemp paper. We hear about that stuff, and people are like, well, you know, there's no real market for that. But I do think that there's a real market for bioremediation, for cleaning up pollution. And the CBD, the medical stuff for kids, is a great thing. And I thought, and I don't know if you followed this or not, but I thought they were trying to pass that bill here in Kentucky as well.
Yeah, I know. I actually have not followed that bill very closely, but I know that, yeah, they are trying to pass bills with regards to using hemp as medicine.
I think there's actually
several bills.
And I think it's important,
I mean,
again, to reiterate. I think it's important for the audience to know, to reiterate to the audience, that there's really three separate issues, right? There's industrial hemp, there's medical marijuana, and there's full-blown legalization of marijuana. And there's really three separate issues. And so it doesn't really surprise me you haven't been following the other two. Your focus has been industrial hemp. I just didn't know if you had been following it as, you know, a side or not. But we do have some other folks involved that have been following that bill, and so maybe we can bring them on in a future show as well. I guess the point is that it sounds like everything's moving forward well. Are there any concerns or any issues that you see going forward at this point?
Actually, you know, there are some issues, for example, we don't have conventional equipment here in the United States for the most part. I mean, I'm sure there's some somewhere, but for the most part, we don't have conventional equipment that's equipped to harvest industrial hemp. You know, the stalks for industrial hemp are very tough. The fibers are very strong. So a lot of our harvesting equipment is not adequate to harvest industrial hemp, and it has to go through different modifications to get it up to par. And I think that we've overcome some of those obstacles because, you know, once we got to the point where the Ag Department said, yes, we're going to move forward with this pilot project, we actually had different groups and different organizations that kind of came out of the woodwork and said, hey, we're already growing canaf. We're already harvesting canaf. And if you've ever seen canaf growing or being harvested or processed, it looks very similar to industrial hemp. So we've got some groups that have, you know, miraculously appeared that are, you know, already capable of doing the harvesting and the processing of this. In fact, we've got, you know, different organizations that have processing equipment that can actually be used on site. So it's one of those things that, you know, as a good friend of mine always says, obstacles create opportunities. So when we have obstacles like the harvesting equipment doesn't work, or, you know, the combine doesn't go tall enough to cut off the tops of the seed, you know, where the seeds are in the industrial hemp, it creates opportunities for companies like International Harvester or John Deere or, you know, Case to kind of step up to the plate and meet those demands that our farmers need. So
how cool would it be?
So, yeah,
how cool would it be to have a Kentucky company actually start producing the equipment to farm industrial hemp as well to harvest it? You know, that would be jobs, which, you know, we've there's been a lot of talk about, will this have a significant impact on the economy? I think it will, and I think that it's not just the direct hemp. It is those secondary things. It's the harvesting. It's going to be warehousing. It's going to be the processing. It's going to be all those other things that aren't necessarily directly just the hemp. It's not just the farming. It's what happens afterward. And
absolutely,
I am very happy that Kentucky's kind of taken the lead on this. It's not often we can say that. And the upside of that is that it puts us in an advantage. And if we can really develop our industrial hemp marketplace here and not just growing the hemp, but also building the equipment or developing whatever, the processing plants or whatever, we have a real opportunity to actually have real economic benefit from something that pretty much we know will grow anywhere in Kentucky.
Absolutely. And as far as the market goes, you know, one of the things I was discussing with one of my counterparts here in the hemp movement is that, you know, hemp can be used to create plastic pellets that are essentially the same as the petroleum plastic pellets that companies use to make everything and anything out of plastic. So if you are looking for a market, just look around your house. Look at all the objects in your house that are made out of plastic, and then imagine that object can be made out of industrial hemp with no retooling of equipment. I mean, it's exactly the same process. You're just putting a biodegradable, earth-friendly plastic into the machine as opposed to, you know, it was petroleum-based product. So,
yeah.
You know, like I said, you're looking for a you know, market for things. Look around your house. Look at all the things that are in your house that are made out of plastic. Look at your computer and your printer and your, you know, little space heater and children's toys and umbrellas and food, you know, cutlery and that kind of thing. I mean, anything you can think of, you can make out of industrial hemp.
Yeah, I know. If I remember right, at least it's urban legend. I've never done the research. Didn't Henry Ford build a car out of hemp?
Absolutely, and in fact, for anybody who's skeptical about that, it's very easy to find on YouTube. You can find a video of Henry Ford actually driving his hemp car around, and he actually takes a sledgehammer to the fender of the car, and it doesn't even put a dent in it, which is phenomenal because that's something that you would never be able to do with our fiberglass or you know, metal door panels or anything like that. But it, you know, if you go to YouTube, quick search for Henry Ford hemp car, we'll find a very short clip of him driving around and taking a sledgehammer to his hemp car. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. I mean, that's really good stuff. Hey, Katie, can you hang on through the break? We'd like to invite callers to call in and ask questions. And
sure.
I don't know if we'll get it. Since you were on last, we've had a format change, too, and we have a co-host, and he usually comes on during the second half, so he may have additional questions as well. So if you can hang on through the break, folks, if you'd like to call in, the number here is area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. And we'll be right back here, folks. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. Back in a few minutes.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
advertisers. Here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email MyViewMatters at AOL.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, and we're back, folks. Welcome back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network, and we're speaking with Katie, who is very well-known to this show, hemp activist in Kentucky. And Katie, can you run down real quick some of the things that you've been involved with that have kind of, I guess, maybe even a quick history of why you got involved in this issue and where you've been on it?
You mean besides industrial hemp? Other issues?
No. I mean, as far as you were on the Industrial Hemp Commission, and there were the Industrial Hemp Museum and a couple of those type of things.
Yeah, actually, I kind of got involved in the movement just simply because I saw that there was a need for the education, and I felt like I was slightly educated, slightly more than the average voter about industrial hemp. And the more that I started to talk to people about it, and the more I learned about it, and more I was taught about industrial hemp, and I will say that, you know, I've had some absolutely phenomenal teachers in this issue, but I ended up as president or sort of acting president of the Kentucky Hemp Museum, which was a traveling exhibit. It was a big gutted-out van that was full of hemp artifacts and memorabilia from the last couple of decades, and you know, because of the work that I had been doing around the state to educate people about industrial hemp and talking to legislators and sheriffs and that kind of thing, I kind of was in the right place at the right time for a spot on the Industrial Hemp Commission, and that is it's actually a commission that's part of the Agriculture Department in Kentucky, which really kind of gave me a big jump on things. It gave me an outlet where I was able to, you know, access legislators more easily. It sent me to Frankfurt quite often, and that Industrial Hemp Commission really sort of upped the ante on what I was doing in regards to industrial hemp. So then I went from, you know, just going around and randomly talking to people and bugging legislators to actually, you know, being invited to come to different counties to meet with groups and organizations and sheriffs and judge executives and magistrates and all that kind of thing. So really, really the Industrial Hemp Commission, and that is still where I am. My term was expired on December 31st, so I thought I was going to be off the commission after that point, but apparently the rule is until they replace you with somebody else, you're actually still on the commission. So I am still a member of the Kentucky Industrial Hemp Commission, and that is really the reason that I've been invited to take part in the hemp pilot programs. And I actually didn't mention this, but the Western Kentucky Pilot Project, I will be overseeing that project. So that is in conjunction with Murray State University, which is in Murray, Kentucky. And we are actually studying European seed, which we're bringing in from Italy to Kentucky to see how it grows here. And we'll be studying the fiber and some different you know, processes and things that we can do with the fiber from hemp, among other things.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, the Murray State, by the way, of all the state campuses, has the most beautiful campus of them all, for those that haven't been there, just as a side note.
It really is.
You know, it's beautiful. It's really a really nice campus. The one thing, I guess, that I was wanted to bring up is that this is not really a relatively new phenomenon. It's been a grassroots thing that's been growing for a number of years. You know, a number of our listeners are familiar with Gatewood Galbraith, and Gatewood championed industrial hemp. But, you know, this has been something that from the grass, both on the left and the right, or at least the traditional left and right, has been something that's been growing for quite some time. And
yeah, absolutely.
You know,
Gatewood was actually the first person that exposed me to industrial hemp, and it was reading his book that kind of jump-started my interest in industrial hemp, where I was interested in liberty and freedom. You know, I was more interested in, you know, politics and just, you know, setting, you know, like Moses said, you know, setting my people free. I was interested in freedom for everybody. And so, you know, it was being involved in a grassroots movement for reducing the size and scope of government that I met Gatewood Galbraith. And then in reading his book, I kind of was exposed to industrial hemp and you know, that's it. I got bitten by the hemp bug and kind of just went crazy from there.
Well, I see we have a caller in the queue, and I believe this is a friend of the show, Daniel Williams. Daniel, are you there? Daniel?
Yes, I am, Ken. How you doing?
Good, man. How have you been?
I've been doing great, thank you. I wanted to call in. I had a question for Katie, but first I wanted to thank her for all the work she does on this project. As you know, being an advocate for any particular cause can be tedious, and when you're dealing with one that has such a huge misconception from the get-go, it's even more tedious. So thank you for all the work you do. And I have a question for Katie. When the federal prohibitions and state prohibitions against the cultivation of hemp are released across the country, where does she see the overall market becoming, and what part do you think does she believe Kentucky would play?
Great question.
Oh, I actually that's a great question. I actually have kind of pictured in my mind exactly where I want Kentucky to be in this industry. But historically, Kentucky was well known for growing, you know, Kentucky hemp. We were very famous for it, and we grew it for fiber. But on top of that, we also grew it for seed for other states. And I really think that certified seed is going to be the best market for Kentucky to be in because, you know, we kind of see Kentucky as being the nursery for growing industrial hemp, harvesting the seed and then selling seed to other states for them to use for, you know, fiber and plastic and diesel and concrete and all the things that they would like to do. Basically, if we can really nurture that and start growing seed in Kentucky, or rather growing for seed in Kentucky, then that would allow us to tap into the market, whatever the market is. So if the market is in food or snacks or, you know, oil for food or drinks or that kind of thing, you know, they're going to have to get their hemp from somewhere. I mean, those seeds don't just magically appear. Somebody's got to buy the seed. So regardless of what the market is.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Daniel.
You think there'll be more money in seed production than actual hemp and its other uses for Kentucky?
I think, see, I don't know that, I honestly, I couldn't tell you in dollars and cents which one is going to be more valuable, but I can tell you that they're never going to have anything if they don't have seed. That's
right.
I mean, the start of the industry. So I do believe that certified seed is a very profitable industry in any agricultural product. Whether you're talking about, you know, lima beans or industrial hemp or canaf or anything like that, certified seed is always something that farmers are familiar with. They know that it's a market and they know that it's profitable because if you don't have your seed, then you don't have your harvest. So, yeah, I think that that's going to be the best bet for Kentucky. Now, granted, when you're growing for seed, you're still going to have the rest of the stalk left over. So if you're harvesting your seed and you're selling off your seed and that's your big profit maker, well, you still have your entire stalk and all the fiber left over. So anything that you can do with that fiber and that stalk is just icing on the cake, really.
Well, what would your position be on genetically modified?
I'm not really a big fan of genetic modifications. I do think that, you know, these are things that we can accomplish by breeding and crossbreeding different cultivars. I mean, if there's some kind of specific thing that you're looking for, I think that those things can usually be accomplished by crossbreeding, which is a totally natural, totally, you know, normal way of actually growing crops and any kind of, you know, whether, like I said, you know, tomatoes or lima beans or anything like that, without injecting DNA from other things into the plants. I'm not really a big fan of genetically modified anything, simply
right.
because we don't have any long-term testing. You know, if we tested it for 20 years and then said, okay, you know, after 20 years of testing, we deem that this is safe, then maybe I'd be a little bit more open to it. But I'm not really a big fan of, you know, kind of purposely mutating crops and then, you know, injecting them into our society or our food, the food chain, essentially.
Think the market would be?
I'm sorry?
How big do you think the national market would be if all prohibitions against cultivation were eliminated? How big do you think the market would grow in the U.S.?
I think it really has the potential to be huge. I don't think it's a silver bullet. I don't think it's one of those things that it's just going to, you know, take off and be enormous, and next thing you know, everything we have is made out of industrial hemp. I think it would take some time to develop here, but, you know, considering the fact that a lot of other countries, in fact, all the other industrialized nations in the world are growing it already, they don't have what we have here in America. They don't have the resources. They don't have the ingenuity. We've got a phenomenal country here. And for all its faults with the, you know, the feds and you know, I could go on and on and on about complaining about what's going on in America. We do have things here that other countries don't have, you know, smaller countries or less populated countries or, you know, countries with limited technology. We've got just fantastic technological advancements in this country. And I think that if we were to lift prohibition everywhere, that it would allow our scientists and our engineers and, you know, creative minds to just take over. And, you know, I think the potential is there for a very huge industry. But, you know, I don't think it's reasonable to think that it's just going to explode, you know, immediately. I think it's going to start off slow. And as people become more comfortable with it, it'll start to take off. And I also, just as, you know, another note there, you know, we've got a big boom in green everything in this country. You know, everybody wants to go green or reduce their carbon footprint or, you know, be organic. And I think that this crop has the potential to inject some green stuff into just about everything that we're doing. So I think that, you know, these organic movements and the farm freedom movements, I think it does absolutely nothing but help the industrial hemp movement.
Well, and if I may say something, real quick, you know, you touched on this, and I want to really emphasize it. You know, it's not going to be a quick overnight thing. And I think what's going to end up being is the market's going to dictate what it gets used for. You know, whatever, like anything.
As the market dictates for everything, yeah.
Exactly. No matter what, if it's a, you know, if there's a need for plastic pellets, well, then there's going to be more hemp used for plastic pellets than anything else. But if it's for demand for food or for clothing or for whatever, you know, I think that that'll drive the market. And I think that's something that once we get out of this experimental phase, if we can, you know, get some regulations off and let farmers just grow what they think they can sell, I think that's one of the things that we'll see over the course of a few years is the market will stabilize and it'll all figure itself out.
I agree with you. I think the market is going to be huge as well. Kathy's right about our country and our resources and our innovation and our spirit of making things work will be very advantageous to us on the global market. But I want to say again, Katie, I'm going to get off the air and
thank
somebody
you.
Else. Okay, thank you very much, and talk to you later, Ken.
Daniel, thank you. Thank you for always to chime in, our friend Daniel Williams. I think that, you know, again, the market's going to dictate what it gets used for, and You know, right now we still have the regulations in place, and so there's not a total freedom on this. And I think that the way some complain that this bill didn't go far enough, or the bills that have been passed didn't go far enough, and I think it's one of those things that you take the victory when you can get it. And, you know, the country's attitude on marijuana, which hemp is often confused with, is changing anyway. And so as those social attitudes change on marijuana, having hemp already geared up and ready to go, as things get deregulated, we're going to be in a much better position to really capitalize on the hemp market.
And if I could interrupt just real quickly, because you mentioned something about, you know, our bill here on the state level not going far enough. One of my big problems that I had with our state legislation was that we did not have a specific definition of industrial hemp. Our definition was kind of, I would say, fluid, in that the fact that it could change as the federal government changed. If you look at Kentucky's hemp law and what we have now, the industrial hemp is defined as however it's defined on the federal level. So if the feds change the industrial hemp definition, then that would change the definition of hemp on the state level. And one of the things that was changed in the Farm Bill was that industrial hemp was specifically defined as any cannabis plant that has less than 0.3% THC. So that was a big success on, you know, one of the big problems that I had with the state legislation. And that was one of the things that was fixed on the federal level. They actually, you know, if you look at those two pages, the very bottom, it's got a specific definition for industrial hemp, and that is one of the big things that we were looking for.
Yeah, well, that's very good. I mean, I think having that defined certainly helps in any market, right? Having definitions, having known quantities certainly helps, and stability helps. And so removing a subjective quantifier and replacing something very substantive and definitive, I think will also do nothing but help that market continue to grow.
Absolutely, yeah.
I was going to see if my co-host wanted to ask any questions. He does, so we're going to bring Dave on. And Dave, you're on.
Hello. Hi, Katie. How are you doing?
Hi, Dave. Great. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you. First thing I wanted to just comment on was, Ken, you were mentioning earlier, and this seems to be kind of a hot topic. There's a concern about the market and, you know, what kind of market, you know, we might have. I can tell you that as a longtime gaming geek, there will definitely be a large market for hemp rope. And any of my fellow people out there that are gaming geeks, they know exactly what I'm talking about. actually, Katie, on a more serious note here, if the average Kentucky farmer wanted to get involved in this, it sounds like it's a pilot program right now, and so it's only available to you know, a certain group of people. But if the average Kentucky farmer wanted to get involved in this, how would they go about doing that?
That's a great question, and I wish I had remembered to touch on this. But if the average farmer wanted to get involved with one of the pilot projects, there's actually a link on the Kentucky Agriculture Department's website, and I'm going to check that link. I think it's KYAGR, as in the abbreviation for Kentucky and Agriculture, .com. So KYAGR.com. They actually have a downloadable application that you can fill out and, you know, you answer some questions, you know, indicate which pilot project you are interested in working on, and you can send that into the Ag Department, which will then be sent on to, you know, the person who's kind of handling that program, you know, and if they're in need of growers for that project, then, you know, as you said, that average Joe farmer can actually get involved in the pilot project as well.
Very cool. That'll definitely be useful. I think that a lot of people will be interested once they get to know that this is going on.
Yeah, absolutely. And there is also, I did actually upload that same document onto Kentucky for Hemp website. So if you go to kentuckyforhemp.com, and it's probably a little bit easier than trying to find it on the Ag Department website. I thought I might go and try to look it up real quick and see if I could find it, but I think it would just be easier to go to kentuckyforhemp, and it's all spelled out, .com, and in that very first blog post, close to the bottom of the post, there is a link where you can click on the link and open up the documents, and you can actually read the letter that was sent out by the Ag Department, announcing the pilot project, and you can also download the form, the application form, that farmers can use to sign up for the pilot project. And that's, you know, I think it would really depend on, you know, if the project needs growers. I don't know how any of the other projects are doing in finding growers. But if there is interest, then that is the best way to kind of get that ball rolling.
Is there a timetable for expanding the pilot project? I mean, is there like a multi-year plan here, or is this just a we'll fit 1 year and see where we're at, and then we'll make a plan for the next year? Is there any sort of long-term plan?
Yeah, I think it's kind of because it was done on short notice, and we were kind of in fact, a lot of us, maybe our ag commissioner was not that surprised, but a lot of us were surprised when the farm bill passed with a hemp amendment in there. For right now, yes, it is kind of one of those, we'll do this first year and see how it goes. And what I'm hoping is that by next year, we will have passed legislation that will allow us to grow commercially. Because while I think research is great, I think, it doesn't hurt to do a little more investigation, a little bit more digging into anything. I think there's plenty of research that's already been done on this issue, and I think it's time to move forward with commercial growing. As far as this year, the official sort of grand opening date for the project is March 30th, so that's coming up. But obviously, it's still going to be a little bit early to plant, so that's our grand opening date. But it looks like it's probably going to be April or very, very early May when we get actual seed in the ground.
Okay. And I guess, is there going to be any sort of ceremony for that? Is it just kind of a, hey, we're doing it?
Well, actually, I'm hoping to have some kind of ceremony. I will be in a meeting later on this week with the Dean of Agriculture at Murray State University. I believe that meeting is going to be on Thursday. So there's a very good chance that we'll have some more specifics to all of this after Thursday. And I would like to have some kind of ceremony, maybe a press conference, something like that to, announce that we are putting seed in the ground. And it's just a historic moment. So I don't think we'll have any shortage of press and people, who are just interested and, want to see what's going on. And, of course, putting seed in the ground isn't quite as exciting as actually harvesting it. So what I would like to do is have something exciting for when we put seed in the ground, and then, maybe a huge party for when we actually harvest the hemp.
Well, definitely keep me informed and keep the show. We'll make sure our listeners are informed of any events surrounding that. I know that there's a lot of grassroots support for industrial hemp, a lot of grassroots support, even from people like myself who I don't really even intend to grow industrial hemp. I just think it's a good idea, and I think people should be allowed to grow it. I think it's something that could possibly help small farmers, with their other economic pressures. So I'm very, very excited about this. I want to reiterate to folks real quick here, because we're reaching the end of the show, that go to Kentucky for Hemp. Spelled out, not the number four, but F-O-R, KentuckyForHemp.com, and that's the website. And then there's also the Facebook page, which is Kentucky for Hemp, three words. And I found that very quickly, just in a very quick search on Facebook. So I want to encourage folks to be involved and to follow the issue. I think it's a very good issue. It's a good win for liberty in general. And as the market continues, to grow. I think the market will determine whether or not this succeeds or fails, which I think that's the best case scenario in any situation, is that we research it till the cows come home, but the real research happens when it hits the market and it lives or dies by its own validity as a product.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I don't think this is going to be one of those things where we have hemp farmers that are too big to fail and then they need a bailout. So.
I certainly hope we never reach that day. Dave, any final thoughts?
I do have one other thing. Katie, you mentioned something, the car that Henry Ford made. This is something that I actually looked into. I'm not going to say when, because I would definitely be dating myself, but when I was in undergrad at NKU, I was went to Dearborn, Michigan, to the Henry Ford Museum. I was doing research on agricultural steam engines. But my mentor in college, who I'm not going to name right now, he asked me to look into that issue, the plastic car. And they have documentation that stated what he used in the car that he produced, specifically the bumper. And it was corn, there was wheat, there were a couple of other things that were used in it. Hemp wasn't one of the things that was used in the production that he put out, but he was, prior to actually making it, he was investigating hemp, and there was documentation about that. So I haven't seen the YouTube video, but the documentation that we have, which is pretty sparse, by the way, but the documentation that we have had a different recipe. It didn't contain hemp.
Well, I stand corrected then. I actually was under the impression that it was made from plastic using hemp and sisal and several different, different agricultural products, but that hemp was a part of it.
Huh. Well, and I'm not going to say for sure that it wasn't, because there wasn't any documentation that said that it was not used, but there is documentation that said that he was investigating hemp as a viable resource for the plastic, and that was before he actually produced it. And then he gave the recipe that was used in the bumper for the car that he actually did produce, and that's probably the one that's on the YouTube video, which again I haven't seen, and hemp wasn't on that list. So we can't say definitively that it was not used, but it's not in the list.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to let the listeners look at the video and do the research themselves, because we're running out of time here. It could very well be also that he didn't use it for the bumper. Maybe he used it for the panels of the car or for something else as well. So, whatever reason. But, Katie, I want to thank you again for coming on to the show. Is there anything else you want to grab here in the last 30 seconds?
No, just another mention, the website. My website is kentuckyforhemp.com, and I have not been very good at updating it lately because I've been so busy with, kind of planning this pilot project. But once we get all the details on the pilot project, I will put all that information on the website for everybody to see.
All right. Well, Katie, thanks again for coming on the show. Greatly appreciate it. Folks, we're out of time. Thank you for tuning into another edition of Liberty Unbridled. We'll be back here next week, same time, every Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and turn into the other shows on the network, too, Monday through Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time as well. Until then, this is Ken Molman signing off. It's been another edition of Liberty Unbridled on the MyView Matters Radio Network. Have a good week.